And so when I was working there after I graduated, I was working for a tour company, and they ran pub crawls and tours out of that hostel. So I became kind of familiar with like how things were operated and set up. But like, fortunately, my wife grew up in an inn on Cape Cod. Oh. So she's had hospitality and lodging experience her whole life.
Oh, great.
So we kind of paired together.
You merged them together.
Correct. And now she's become kind of a chef of sorts, and professionally trained and all that jazz. So
okay.
Yeah, we kind of bring all three levels of like the hospitality in the front of the house and the bar and then the restaurant and the beds.
You're a hospitality power couple. That's what I would say.
Possibly, yes. That would be one way to phrase it, yeah.
Hello, friends and travelers. Thanks for listening. You are riding along on the Hostel Road Trip Podcast. Our mission is to spread awareness of the true hostel experience in the Americas and share stories from the fascinating hosts who create those unique facilities. I'm your host, Jimmy Black, joined alongside co-founder of International Travelers House, Bobby Dyer. Each session, we sit down with hostel operators or travel influencers to hear about their road to success, discuss trending hostel topics, and close with tips for travelers who are seeking to have the ultimate experience when visiting each destination. You can't afford to miss this trip. Now fasten your seatbelts and let's hit the road.
Welcome back to Hostel Road Trip. My name is James Black. I am here alongside with my co-founder, Robert Dyer.
Excited to be here.
Eric Faria from World Packers. And Giles, the founder of the Tebaret Hostel here in Vermont.
Hey, guys.
We are so happy to be here with you. As we were just about to begin, you started to give us a little bit of information about the name.
The name.
Tell us more about how you came to choose that.
So when we moved to Vermont, we came here from Rome. So we were living overseas. I've been doing a second undergraduate there. My wife had studied abroad and then moved back to do some work. That's where we came up with the idea to do this sort of project. So Hostel Tebaret, we figured when we named it, it had to have the word hostel in it.
Sure.
Because otherwise people wouldn't understand the whole idea of
what you're doing. Yeah.
Shared rooms, shared facilities, kind of that, like, it's a very different traveler mentality than somebody who goes and stays in a five-star hotel.
Absolutely.
And so we want to make sure that was in the name, and we're located in the Mad River Valley here in Vermont. And so there's a lot of places that are named after rivers and things like that, so we chose a different river.
Be a little more unique. Yes.
Yeah, we chose the river that flows through the middle of Rome, which is the Tevere, or in English we know it as Tiber.
That's so cool. Now, you're abroad in Italy. Is this where you had your first exposure to hostels?
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Now, so you started to stay in them as a backpacker, or did you start working at them first?
No, I'd never worked at a hostel before we opened this place.
Awesome.
So I've been bartending
so cool.
In the bar industry since I've been about 18.
Okay, that ties into a bit more of what we'll talk about with your
Correct.
Bar establishment here.
Yep.
We want to have some of the listeners, especially the industry operators, hear some of your insight and experience
sure.
in there. But so you got into the hostel industry being exposed over in Europe, very much similar to us. I had my first hostel experience studying abroad
yep.
in Ireland
yep.
and as traveling about and realizing, man, this would be great if there were more of these back home.
Right.
So, you know, that's so cool to see that you're another person that was inspired abroad
yep.
and then came back into it. Would you say that there was any hostels abroad in particular that inspired you? Or your favorite hostel abroad?
The Wombat in Vienna.
Oh, the Wombat!
Is just the location next to the Naschmarkt, and since we lived in Europe and whatever, we have a lot of good friends who live in Vienna now, so we do go there quite a bit. We don't obviously stay at the Wombat anymore. We're a little bit older, have a kid.
Cool.
But the Wombat in Vienna was awesome. Bulldog in Amsterdam is always a good time.
Yeah.
And then the Yellow in Rome, which is actually kind of one of the places we got the idea to do this place. Our friend Marco is one of the owners there. And so when I was working there after I graduated, I was working for a tour company, and they ran pub crawls and tours out of that hostel. So I became kind of familiar with like how things were operated and set up. But like, fortunately, my wife grew up in an inn on Cape Cod.
Oh.
So she's had hospitality and lodging experience her whole life.
Oh,
so we kind of paired together.
You merged them together.
Correct. And now she's become kind of a chef of sorts, and professionally trained and all that jazz. So
okay.
Yeah, we kind of bring all three levels of like the hospitality in the front of the house and the bar and then the restaurant and the beds.
You're a hospitality power couple. That's what I would say.
Possibly, yes. That would be one way to phrase it, yeah.
Okay, so you did this 10 years ago you started?
We started this we bought the place in May of 2009 and opened July 4th weekend that year.
Oh, my Lord, that's a quick turnaround. Good
yeah.
for you.
So, yeah.
So, you've been here 10 years.
This is year 10, yeah.
And when you first opened up, was it simultaneous bar and restaurant and hostel?
Or no. So we opened up the beds operating right away, the bar doing its thing because we had a grandfather liquor license in, so it was
a passive
background check, and here's your bar.
Oh, my God.
And at 25, I think I was 26 at the time. My wife was 24. It was kind of one of those like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Here we go. Our plan in the beginning was to be much more focused on the guests and the hostel traffic,
mm-hmm.
Doing dinners for guests,
yes.
doing like bagged lunches for people who wanted to go out and hike. And over the course of like the first 2 years, we ran the restaurant sort of like doing pop-ups and then dinners for guests. And if people were in at the bar, they could join us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we made the jump to doing a full service restaurant thing and did that for about 3 years.
Okay.
And then after we had our son, we decided to take care of our son full time instead of manage 22 other people's lives and live, you know, livelihoods, etc.
Yeah.
So we shut the restaurant down and we've just recently reopened it, collaborating with a group in town that owns the Mad Taco and a catering company, and our chef who was here when we closed the restaurant went there and now has come back. So it's like we got the band back together. Yeah. Everybody's happy. It's a good fit. So like now, over the years, we were much more, like we were talking about earlier, focused on, one, getting guest traffic in, but for us, that's mostly in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So the other times of the year, we have a really good local following. We depend on, you know, a lot of the local families and businesses to help promote and, you know, market us to people and get the word out, because we are, like we were saying, kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Sure, yes.
Yeah. It's
you're off the beaten path.
Yeah, you can't get here without a car, really. Yeah. There's no public transportation.
How did you find this place? Did you grow up here?
No, so my wife has family that moved up here in 2003, and her parents had been coming to a ski house with her and her siblings in Rochester, which is where I was telling you guys to go to lunch, since like the mid-90s.
All right.
So they knew the area, and it was a very like, oh, we're looking to do this. Hey, we know a realtor here. Hey, let's look at this.
All
and then
together,
we moved back from Italy in December 15th of 08,
uh-huh.
and we bought this place May 1st of 09. So, I mean, it was like
boom, boom, boom.
Got here, boom. Yeah. We were motivated and ready to start this thing up, and now here we are almost 10 years later. And awesome. We're still here, which is kind of crazy, but also kind of awesome.
Yeah, you've made that curve. Now, I think it's really cool that you mentioned that, you know, you started off very young, and when you're younger in your mid-20s and you don't have the responsibilities of a family yet, it's easier to put in those 60, 70-hour weeks
at
and get
least.
It going.
Yes.
Yeah, and then as you start to have a family, I think that's really cool to highlight, though, because a lot of people think, like, oh, if I start to have kids, I'm going to get out of this industry, or I can't, you know, do this both at the same time. But you can. And
Yeah,
we've met plenty of people have, and you make your priorities. And you make your adjustments.
And that's kind of...
That's life.
That's how you make it work.
Yeah.
And like, so until recently, like, we usually, after we shut the restaurant down, we would work really, really hard all winter. We would do everything ourselves, basically.
Yeah.
And then once the snow melted, we'd get on a plane and go back over to Europe and hang out
and
not be here during the summer. So find people to stay and take in the guests.
Oh, that's
so we
great.
Were still always taking care of the hostel people and making sure that the beds were always available. But
you were still going to travel, though.
Which we were still traveling and we weren't going to, like, not live our lives because other people wanted to come up here and live their lives. It's one of those.
There's a balance you have to have because you want to stay in tune with your traveler, with your guest, and you want to still have that same experience.
For sure.
And a lot of hostel owners will often say, like, oh, I loved volunteering at a hostel. Managing a hostel was okay, but it's a nightmare to own one. But it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't have to
be
that way.
The balance.
Correct.
Keep your priorities and you're able to make adjustments. All right, well, we are trucking along here with our man Giles, and we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, but when we get back, we're going to talk more about the trending topics in the hostel industry with a focus on this bar restaurant and this badass burger you got, and hear a little bit of insight about how you can run two of these operations at one and blend them together. Stay tuned.
Hey, James, I have a question for you now. How can you be here on the road with us recording all these podcasts away from your 6 properties?
Easy. I rely on CloudBits, the all-in-one property management suite, to help grow my reservations and keep guests happy. With CloudBits software, I have one place where I can see everything going on with my businesses, from daily check-ins to comprehensive reporting.
It sounds very helpful, man. Tell me more about it.
My staff loves it, too, because it's incredibly easy to use and automates a lot of their daily tasks. This means we all get to focus on the most important thing, our guests.
Cool. And how can a hostel owner get started?
Our friends at CloudBeds are offering a $50 credit to Hostel Road Trip podcast listeners. Just visit cloudbeds.com/roadtrip. Again, go to cloudbeds.com/ROADTRIP and see why tens of thousands of properties trust CloudBets to power over 700,000 beds worldwide.
Welcome back to Hostel Road Trip. We are here at the Hostel Tevere, named after the Tiber River in Rome.
Very good.
Very excited to now dive into the other half of this operation, which is this awesome restaurant bar that is so smoothly intertwined into the facility. I loved how you walked us in through the back of the restaurant bar here, and then just through a very slick hallway entrance, all of a sudden we're in reception at the lot. Yeah. But at the same time, you could tell a clear separation when needed, when you want to separate the two.
For sure.
But very easily accessible for everyone inside. So tell us a bit about, in general, what your restaurant bar offers here.
So we were lucky enough to, buy this place in 2009, right as the craft beer scene in Vermont was blowing up. And Sean Lawson from Lawson's Finest Liquids happens to live like 2 miles down the road.
Nice.
So we basically became the home bar for him here in Warren.
Oh,
and
man.
Then with all the other great beer guys coming through, it was a very like, oh, I guess we're a craft beer bar.
Sweet.
And we fell into it in like a very like, I've been bartending since I was 2019 or so.
Okay.
So yeah, like 6 or 7 years of experience. And then this came along and it was like, oh, okay, well, that's the type of bar we're going to be because that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it fit into the area. And my wife is a super, super talented chef and did a lot of like great, just like home cooking, like just tasty, like, oh, that was a really good meal. Like,
yeah.
And so kind of paired those two things together and found a niche within the community where we, because of the hostel, always had our dishes priced accordingly to the bed. Like it never made sense to like have a $40 bed and have a $35 entree.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just not.
I don't see that playing well. I mean, there would be people who would definitely be down for that, but for what we were looking for and the majority of our customers, it was really important to be able to offer them food at a reasonable price and drinks at a reasonable price and give everybody the opportunity to not have to break the bank and not have to leave. You know what I mean? Like around here, if you want to go drive to dinner, it's kind of like it's a 10-minute drive. If you go the closest next time, if you go the next one, you're talking 25 minutes. So you think about time and gas and all the things that go into that. You can stay here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things where everything is within one entity.
One-stop shop.
Correct.
I love it.
How many seats do you have here?
We can seat 69 total between the restaurant and bar.
That's great. So you got 69 and then you know a little over 30 in the hospital.
Yeah, 30 upstairs.
You could have 100 people.
Yeah, the building capacity is 99. And it's all varied on the water usage and how you allocate it.
Yeah, so you can have a pretty good party in here, that's for sure. Now, we talked a bit about the challenges of getting a bar and a liquor license within the hostel industry. Some cities just don't even allow it because they don't recognize hostels as an entity and the challenges of that with the perception. Now, you got lucky here. You were saying that it was grandfathered in.
Yeah.
But, you know, from the American stance that we're hearing a lot about are people that want to have these bar operations to increase the financial footprint of their existing guests,
correct,
as a lot of the European hostels and Australian hostels have set up the model for. But tell us a bit about the outside guests that come here, because I think that's such a cool element to remember that you can also cater to the community and have them come inside your establishment. How's that going for you?
It's going really well. We have a really supportive local community. We've also, you know, taken it upon ourselves to support a lot of local musicians and bring them in here to play.
Uh-huh.
Other local chefs will do pop-up dinners and things. We're a seasonal vacation community. And like most of our traffic comes in the winter. Mm-hmm. So in the winter, the town goes from being, I don't know, 5,500 people between, you know, town south of here, and a couple of towns north to like 15,000 people, 20,000 people every weekend.
Quadruples.
I mean, it's so there's a critical mass of people where there's not even enough seats to service everybody here.
Uh-huh.
So you kind of fall in that weird, like I was saying to you guys before, we do a lot of work in the winter. And then in the summers, you know, until recently, we would just take off because there wouldn't be enough traffic. And so a lot of it is us catering to a lot of service industry people around here, especially when I lived on site. Like, it was easy for me to stay open late for those people that are getting off work at midnight and want to have a drink real quick after work. Like, I'm living on site. It's no skin off my back to stay open for an extra hour. And so using those kind of connections and then the people we know from the mountain and all them to kind of, like, steer the right people down here.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it
does. Because this place isn't – and I'm not saying it in, like, a – we don't want everybody to come down. There's just some people who are going to come in and be like, wait, it's – you got to share a room and you got to share a bathroom and there's a restaurant and there's a bar, but there's other people. And like it, for some people, it might just not click, and that's fine. But like most of the people we know that have come in here and had a great time, send the people that they know are just going to like get it right away. And it makes things really smooth and awesome. And it's, you know, most of our guests are return traffic. I could say more than 50% of our guests are people who've stayed here before.
That's awesome.
And of the other 50%, a lot of those are recommendations from those people who stayed.
The old organic word of mouth.
So it's like, hey, I'm coming up this weekend. By the way, so-and-so told me to come. Oh, cool. You're good.
Yeah.
Don't have to worry about you for 1 second.
Oh, that's great. Right.
So it's a really
already vetted. Yeah.
And it's like, no, but it's like, it kind of self-polices itself because we're in the middle of nowhere. You have to have a car to get here. We're not dealing with like a major European city where you could have Joe Schmo transient who took a shower the day before, decides he wants a bed for the night, and then doesn't end up leaving for how many weeks or whatever. Like we've all heard the horror stories of the hostels in Europe and that happening or other major cities. So like it's nice to be able to feel that comfortable with our guests at all times.
Absolutely. And I think that brings in a good point of having that repeat guest, and when you see that happening, you know you got something going right.
Yeah, for sure.
They're coming back for you. But I think what's awesome and what you're doing here, Giles, is the community outreach that's happening organically through your bar restaurant. So many of our hostel operators and managers we've talked to have difficulty with their neighbors and with the perception of what they're doing within their city.
Oh, 100%.
And they feel like they're walking on eggshells, and they're, you know, always trying to make sure they're not disturbing people or, you know, not throwing gasoline on the fire. But we were at the D Acres Organic Farm and Hostel, and one of the ways he broke down the barriers of the bad perception of the hostel is he started to invite the school kids onto the farm to do workshops and learn about sustainable living and all these things. And by doing that, he won over the parents, he won over the community.
You just got to get the people in the door. Yeah. In the hostel industry, almost every hostel I've been at, you just have to walk through the door and then you're like, oh,
not bad.
This is great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not, there's not that, it's literally just taking that first leap and being like getting over the word hostel.
Yes. Now with the bar and the logistics of running it as a smooth operation intertwined with your hostel, obviously you had some great relevant experience.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife had great relevant experience. We joked calling you the power couple of the hospitality. But what would you say were some tips that you might give an operator that's getting into that opening of a bar or a restaurant within their establishment, maybe some trade secrets to avoid or challenges or struggles you've had within that?
Well, that's a great question. A big thing is starting off learning that it's easier to do more things than it is to try to do too many things and then take them away.
A very good point.
So, I mean, like if you want to be like, oh, we're going to be a 7 day a week bar and restaurant. To go back from that is really hard for people, and it's really hard for like the general public to wrap their minds around. Whereas if you start off and you're like,
weekend,
like right now we're doing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sundays with this new restaurant project.
Yeah.
We're probably going to add 2 nights.
Yeah.
But we're not going to take away any nights. You know what I mean? Like,
it's
giving expectations.
Correct. Yes. And then taking them away, which is really hard. Instead of like being like, yeah, we're doing this, and they're like, man, I wish they did that more. And then you do it more.
Yeah.
And recognizing like when those things need to happen, but not also, but also like how to do them effectively and like where the seasonality of those things occurs. Yeah. Because every hostel is going to be different depending on if you're a city or you're here. Like we're super busy in the winter, we're not busy in the summer. So to run 6 days a week in the summer makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
But the local crowd wouldn't hold it against us if we were, you know, we cut back to 4 days from 6 days in the winter, if it was a consistent thing.
Seasonal change.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
If they are aligned with expectations.
Exactly. So instead of being like, we're going to do this and we're going to do this, and you know, like everybody wants to do so much, and then you start to realize once you pick your head up after you've just been working for years, like, oh man, I can't do all this. Like, I literally can't do all this. Like,
that's a very good point because I feel like a lot of people are thinking about getting into the industry because they think it's easy.
You don't see what goes on behind the scenes.
Behind the curtain. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Especially in a bar restaurant, it takes such a team
for sure
to pull it off and do it consistently.
Well, have it. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And have it be consistent. Yeah.
And I think that's such great advice to any potential operator who can do that. And from experience ourselves, one of our locations had a beer and wine license in a restaurant space. And what we found out quickly is everyone's got an opinion about a bar. Everyone, the mailman, the grocery guy, everyone, hey, you should do this, you should have that.
You know what you should do.
Yeah, oh, that line. And we were green and we were young and we were ambitious and, you know, you think you're indestructible and you can do anything.
Yeah.
And we tried to do everything. And we're open for breakfast, we're open for lunch, we're open for dinner, we're open 7 days a week. And all of a sudden, like, I'm getting gray hairs in my chops. What the fuck is this?
How is this happening?
You know, I'm smoking too many cigarettes, I'm not eating right. You know, everything kind of goes against you at some point because you're trying too hard. And one of the things, if I could go in a time machine, and we talk about it all the time, like, man, you know, we should have just opened up from 4 to 10, you know, like 5 days a week. And then from there.
Keep it simple, simple. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. The more simple it can be. Like I said, like, after we shut the restaurant down, for 4.5 years, it was just me and my wife and then one lady who helped us run the bar one night a week.
Yeah.
And we did everything because it was like, why am I going to pay out when I can suck it up and do it myself and then take the time off later?
Yeah.
And it was like, we knew the time off was coming. It wasn't like, you know, some of these places, like I'm sure in San Diego, it's always busy.
Yes. Yeah,
like it's always it's 80 it's sunny year, every day. Yeah. It's always busy. Whereas here, like once the snow melts, there's nobody for 60 days.
Wow.
If we're lucky, we'll get a couple Yes Tomorrow Kids or something, but like you don't see anybody.
Yeah.
They call it mud and stick season for a reason. Like, it's just mud and sticks. That's it. And that's twice a year around here. So
that's great.
You just have to, really be smart about what you want to accomplish and what you're able to accomplish.
And what you enjoy doing.
Yeah. And that's the other, be happy with what you're doing. Like, quality. I love bartending. It's great.
Yeah. But that is great advice for our listeners out there. And I wish I had gotten that advice from you before we tried ours. Now, is the staff from the restaurant entirely different from the hostel staff or do they intermingle?
The bar staff is my people now, and the restaurant staff is the taco people.
Okay, because that outsourcing.
But that's only within like the last 3 months.
And then,
otherwise, it was always on us.
And then, who works the hostel side of things? Is like flipping the beds. You,
me, and my wife.
Okay, so you guys are old school.
So I change beds and clean toilets for a living. Yes,
we were texting earlier and emailing, and I told you that's the most authentic hostel owner response I've ever heard. Yeah. Get here when you get here, but my head may be in a shitter or I may be flipping beds.
That's right.
Like, there we go, man. This guy's a real thing.
You gotta do it.
Now, as far as this intermingling of the two operations, do you ever have any issues with security as far as guests from the bar and the hostel keeping things secure, safe? How does that flow?
I'm going to knock on wood. So we've been here over 9 years. We haven't had an issue.
That's great.
Like I said, we live in the middle of nowhere, so you do have to have a car to get to us, which assumes some level of affluence to begin with.
You don't have drifters on the front.
Correct. Steps. There's no drifters walking down the road.
Yeah.
We also, you know, just based on like the local population and who stays around here, it's a lot of people's friends that are coming up that like they don't have enough couches for their 30 friends to come up because it snowed 4 feet.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of overflow. And ultimately, like our average age that stayed here over the course of 10 years is probably closer to 40 than it is 30.
That's really cool to hear.
And we're not a college. Like I guess that's where like a lot of the bad reception I feel like for hostels comes from is everybody thinks it's a college party.
Yes.
Like there are 44 privately owned and operated condos that are located directly behind the hostel here that we have nothing to do with other than sharing water.
Yeah.
And when we first moved in, there was an outrage about a hostel coming in.
Oh yeah.
And then after a year, half the people were like, oh, that place is chill as fuck. We're going to go down there. And then after another year, most of the other people were like, oh, this is great. And now a lot of the people who were up in arms about it 9 years ago have had full season renters every winter, not because their condo is amazing, but because we're here.
That's big. Wow.
And so like that, just being able to like do that. And like there are some of those people whose perception still has not changed. Mm. They're assholes. Excuse my
language.
But almost everybody else has been like, wow, that isn't what I thought it was going to be, and I'm really glad that's here. And
exactly.
So, like, operationally for us to just be able to kind of buck the mold or buck the trend of what people think hostels are all about, and it's just a big college party, and they'd be playing beer pong on the deck, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, this is like a bar. This is like a legit business.
Yeah.
Like, you can't operate like a college party and expect the town and the police and your neighbors to treat you like a real legit business.
And your bottom line.
Or your liquor license or your lodging license or whatever goes in. So there's a lot of making sure that what we do not only fits with the local community, but are also our guests and where they're coming from and making sure they're comfortable with everything that's going on. So like we do a lot of live music, but we almost always stop the music by midnight, 12:30 at the latest to make sure that the guests aren't being disturbed at a super late hour, and half the time they're all down here partying anyways.
Right.
So it's like a win-win for everybody, but at the same point, you're just trying to make sure that everybody like you said, feel safe, feel secure, clean. Like, we don't allow outside bedding. So we've never had a problem with any sort of, like, cleanliness issues because we've been very diligent about, like, your shit's not coming in. Like, leave your sheets and your blankie and your whatever in your car. We've got everything here and plenty, you know, if you need extras. So
that's a good way to stop things, because it's usually not you who causes the problem. It's someone else from the outside. So I think that's a great point. And I think it was also awesome that you brought up that your age demographic is actually closer to 40, because along our travels, that's very much the same. Even if someone would be willing to try out a hostel, like, well, you know, I'm 35. I'm not going to go there. It's like, it's a college party. I'll feel weird. When in actuality, we were at the Burlington Hostel last night. I think we might have been some of the youngest people in there. There was a bunch of 7-year-old dudes and walking around and talking travel stories and having a good time. And they were great. But I think that's so important that people know that in Europe and Asia and Australia, this is how they travel well into their 60s, 70s, 80s. Yep. It's just a way of accommodations for them. And we're hoping to make that the same over here.
Yeah, I mean, when we were starting this, there was a big issue with us, with people connotating the hostel with youth hostels. And us having to literally say to people who are trying to write contracts, whatever, like, it's not a youth hostel.
They'd
be like, well, what's the difference? We'd be like, well, we're not catering to anybody under the age of 21, probably not even into the age of under 25.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, how does that work? Like, well, just watch and it'll happen. But just people having these weird, these preconceived notions of what hostels are. And that's another, like, operational thing that we've lucked out on, is because we have the commercial kitchen, we can't have a residential kitchen for guests to use.
Oh, okay.
So it's one of those, a lot of people come in and be like, well, I thought all hostels had to have a communal kitchen. It's like, well,
not
some do, but some don't. And
some
so
are not allowed,
you know, like,
to.
A lot of hostels don't have a bar. A lot of hostels don't have a full service restaurant. So there's a lot of give and take. And that's why, like, there's no definition of what a hostel is other than shared rooms, shared facilities.
Yes. Yeah.
And what facilities are provided beyond that is kind of hostel to hostel, which also makes the hostel traveling experience great, because you never know what you're going to get half the time.
Very true.
You know, like, some of the best stories my wife will tell are about, like, when they were in Cadiz in southern Spain traveling, and they got to get the hammock tent or the hammock beds up on the rooftop. And it was like, that was the craziest week of our lives. And it's like, well, I bet if you were in a hammock in Cadiz for a week, you'd be having crazy time. So, you know, they weren't expecting that going in, you know what I mean? So stuff like that.
I think that's a good thing to highlight there. You know, you might want to try to go for that commercial kitchen license, or you might want to try to go for that beer and wine license, but there are also trade-offs to the point where with that commercial kitchen, now you might not be able to have the residential.
Correct.
In our situation, when you got the beer and wine license, now you can't have a BYOB situation going on.
Which is very...
Yeah, so you have these trade-offs going on, and you got to balance it out for your particular situation, because I think you're right, it is situational. Mm-hmm. What's best for your operation, where you're at, where you're located, things of that nature.
What's the biggest challenge to keep this place clean?
Yeah, old houses, you know,
just,
they got great bones.
Just staying on top of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things, if you do it every day, it takes an hour. If you wait a week, how long does it take to, you know, like, and that's the other thing, like, it's a hostel. Yeah, I always say to my wife, like, the only person who's going to see the bathroom clean is the first person to use it. Like, I can't be standing up there with, like, a bell and a towel and, like, okay, you're done. Okay, I'll go clean it real quick and let it. Like, you can only do the best you can do, but, like, just staying on top of it and being very proactive about, like, oh, there's dust on that. I just do it.
Yeah.
Don't think, like, oh, I'm going to put that on the list and I'll get to all those things, whatever. Like, I literally spend most of my time cleaning toilets, changing beds, and vacuuming.
Yeah.
Like, I would bet, like, 3 hours a day. On average, that's what I do. And whatever, like, it is what it is.
You get good at it, though.
You get super good at it, though. Like, when I'm outside and we have, like, sheets hanging on the line, and there'll be, like, there was a group of women out there one time, and I was folding fitted sheets.
Yeah.
And this one woman was like, damn. And I was like, what? She's like, you can fold a fitted sheet. I was like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, can you teach my husband? I was like, no. Because he's not going to do it 10,000 times before he gets it right every time. You
and
know what I mean?
It's so, like, true. It's almost like after years of doing it, you become like a robot where something turns off and there you are just racking through sheets. Yeah. Like an assembly machine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Taki always made a very good point about cleanliness in the hostel, housekeeping.
Yeah.
He's been doing it for over 20 years.
Yep.
Right. And he's always a housekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, like, I'm getting old, I need to exercise, I listen to music, some books.
That's true.
I listen to podcasts.
Yeah, just put a podcast in and go. That's what I do.
Yeah, and he's like, if I don't do this, I do something else, I would need to take some time off.
To go to the gym.
To go to the gym.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So
therapeutic. Sometimes, you know, like
it's super mindless.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, you're like, I just need to not think or talk to anybody for 2 hours. Come on, go clean the upstairs.
Because so many times when you're an owner or a manager in the house, and you're faced with everyone's problems that they couldn't fix or handle. So you're making decisions between bad and worse.
100%.
You know, and you're just like, these are so challenging. And I'm dealing with lawyers and bankers and zoning officials and permit people. And oh my God, isn't this folding this flat sheet just the most calm and peaceful moment of my day right now? I'm like, why is he smiling? But you get in that moment of serenity. It's so true. So thanks so much, Giles. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're welcome.
I want to thank Bob Dyer.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Freya.
Thank you.
And if anybody wants to check out what we're doing on the internet, you can find everything hosteltevere.com or all the social medias, Hosteltevere. And I'm able to be followed at GilesASmith.com or Giles A. Smith, GilesASmith.
And wait for the episode to be streamed coming soon and shortly, and other episodes as well on Road Trip, HostelRoadTrip.com, and our Facebook page, Hostel Road Trip. We are moving southward to the Homestyle Hostel, where we wrap up our Vermont campaign, and then we'll head westward from there.